Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Sometimes you gotta stay in, and you know where I live.
ANR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, and may the 4th be with you. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs, Mateo.
Yes.
How are you doing today, brother?
I'm doing great.
Finally for us, I feel like the grind is over. Last night we completed the draft review show, had a great interview with Hugh Jackson, which we will bring to you today at 2 o'clock here on CBD for all of you who wanted to get a chance to hear that. And obviously it's a big Star Wars day.
It is a big Star Wars day, and I'll be honest, I want to listen back to that interview because, you know, we did it live, and Hugh Jackson just really dropped an awful lot of knowledge about both the brand new Cleveland Browns and the guys that are currently, you know, that make up the Cleveland Browns as we sit right now here in Berea. And his expectation of what should come for the 2016 season and what and kind of the accountability that he's creating slowly but surely with the players that are in the building and what he expects of them. So I like that.
Yeah, I like it too, and we'll get some very, very interesting takes from the head coach. You'll hear that. Also very happy to have Jenny Vrentis, the senior writer for the Monday Morning Quarterback and Sports Illustrated, calling in at 1:30. She was in Cleveland Thursday night and wrote this great article on the Browns' new approach about how what the Browns are doing, the plan, the implementation of the plan, the origins of that plan, and what it means going forward in this draft, because people have talked so much about all the trades the Browns made, and they made 5 trades. And they opened the day with 10 picks. This is what's amazing. Think about this. The Browns opened, they went into the draft before the trade. I shouldn't say open the day. Before the trade with Philly, they were going to slated to have 10 picks in the 2016 NFL draft. After all 5 trades were done, the Browns picked 14 players. They added a 15th Jamar Taylor. And they still have 3 future picks coming out of that deal that are a 1st and 2 seconds. So from what was supposed to be 10 picks, they have 15 players and 3 future players. And I would imagine that they'll parlay some of that into more players and future players. And it's an opportunity to kind of grow and grow and really just get this foundation built. And Jenny Vrentis will have some updates on that for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think that, you know, those picks, the high picks, what we see right now, and essentially as you look at our roster, you know, from the, I don't know, 10,000-foot view looking down on where we are, you could probably say, oh, we're going to use this for this and this for that. But I think a lot has to be said, you know, once we get these 14 picks, you know, plus that the 15th gentleman, you know, traded from Miami here in a Browns uniform, we don't necessarily know what we have yet. And I think coming out of training camp and as the season starts, that's when you can kind of talk about, well, where do we go? Where do we go next? Because these guys are the first building block of the future of the Cleveland Browns. Yep. And I would think that the next series of assets, and they're significant with 2 firsts and 2 seconds. Okay,
absolutely.
They're going to become the next building block of the future of the Cleveland Browns. And based on what we get out of this current roster, plus the addition of the 15 gentlemen in a Browns uniform, next year's assets could be the catapult, you know, towards if we are a 6-10 team to a 9-7 or, you know, competing a little bit more sooner. Yeah. Than I guess a lot of people think is possible for the Browns coming from where they've been just 5 months ago.
Right. And that's what to me is exciting. This is a chance to get the foundation. And we've been talking to some people around the organization. And, you know, what is exciting about these guys is that not only who they are, the character, the things they dove into to find out about these guys, their work ethic, their motivation, but that when you are really trying to impart a culture change, and we've heard so many regimes say that, but when you have a new head coach, a coaching staff with this much experience that are all focused on the same thing, which is getting the best out of these guys every day and making the Browns a winning organization, to bring in 14 players who don't know the Browns, who haven't been here and gone through any other regimes, who have not been here for the losing, who have not been here for the turmoil and the change, guys who have a fresh slate that are going to come in like sponges absorbing the message of Hugh Jackson and his coaching staff, that you really do have the opportunity to lay that foundation with this core group. And then if you drafted well this year, you have the opportunity over the next couple of drafts where you've got 4 picks in the first 2 rounds next year, 3 picks in the first 2 rounds the following year. When you think about that, that's 7 guys that are going to be first or second rounders added to this nucleus. You can then start picking certain positions, start adding to this team, and really kind of fill in what you need to get very good.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to your point, to go back into, you know, when I was drafted, I've made it, you know, known before that an 858 area code called my phone and I had no dialogue with the San Diego Chargers and so on and so forth. So I had no clue that I was going there. So that being said, I really didn't understand because they were way out there on the West Coast. I wasn't following the San Diego Chargers each and every season because I wasn't really much a fan. I was focusing on winning that national championship and having my best season and preparing for the NFL draft. And I would think that some guys may have a bias of where they'd like to go. And I know there was the stories about the Tennessee Titans taking Jalen Ramsey and having him go back to Nashville. And that's all fine and good. But that's one or two teams of where you'd love to go, best case scenario. Ultimately, for the type of individual that we drafted, these look like a guy that say, just put me in a uniform and get me in the white stripes and let me go do what I do. And so whether it was the Toronto Argonauts, the Cleveland Browns, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Seattle Seahawks, the Denver Broncos, it's give me that opportunity and let me go do. And I think that's a lot of the reason why I'm such in favor of this draft class and in Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta and Andrew Berry and what we've learned of them throughout this draft by their words and by their actions in drafting these types of individuals.
Yeah, it is about a move. And, you know, it's funny talking about a guy like, for example, Robert Kimdiche. Robert Kimdiche is the kind of guy that can only go to a certain few places.
Correct.
And it's kind of the rich get richer because you have to be a playoff team. You have to have a tremendous veteran culture and a winning culture and a place that's proven they can deal with these guys. So, for example, where could he go? Arizona. Obviously, what they did with Honey Badger, talk to him. New England. Green Bay. These are the kind of places.
Probably Denver.
I don't know if Green Bay would actually take him.
I don't think so.
But so
Ted Thompson would not take him, so that means Green Bay wouldn't take him.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the rich get richer there. It's interesting, but the Browns went with guys that they're not going to have to worry
and
about.
And in some case, looking back on last year, a free agent signing and a draft pick, the Dallas Cowboys, you know, take the jump on Greg Hardy, right? Sign him to a big deal.
Got burned.
Randy Gregory in the draft got burned. So, but to your point, the Dallas Cowboys were set to make that run, and they had a culture in that building with Jason Garrett as their head football coach and Romo and Witten. They had the guys that they needed to basically reel in those personalities.
Sure.
And ultimately, I think we all know that your guy Tony Romo getting hurt led to the demise of the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm sure the absence of DeMarco Murray hurt them as well in their run game, but those personalities didn't thrive in Dallas. Because some of those personalities, the leadership personalities were subdued because of Romo's injury.
No question. By the way, since the draft, going into the draft, the Browns had the worst odds to win the Super Bowl, or best odds, depending on how you look at it, at 200-1. The Browns, post-draft, are now at 100-1 with the Titans and the 49ers.
200-1 to 101?
Yeah.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance for the Cleveland football Browns. So that's interesting. For those,
and you know what that means to me?
What does it mean to you?
Someone, they made headway, and someone took notice. Nothing more than that.
Yep.
Otherwise, it would have went down to, you know, 150, 180. You know, they took a step.
Yeah, it's interesting that they. That means they didn't want to take any more bets at the plus 200, which is, you know, I mean, I don't know that any of those teams that we talked about right there are in danger of winning the Super Bowl at any point. But
correct.
Nonetheless, it is certainly something that is interesting to talk about there for the Browns. And, you know, I'm trying to look up right now. Here we go. Division odds, championship, Super Bowl. All right. The Philadelphia Eagles are plus 600 and are... That puts them very much at the bottom. So you've got the Browns, Niners, Titans, Chargers, Bucks, Jags, Eagles.
And to talk about the Eagles, why are we talking about the Eagles?
So they are in the bottom eight. They're considered to be in the bottom eight of the
league.
So
if they were the eighth worst team next year, that would mean we hold
the
at or about the eighth pick in the NFL draft, along with 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 with the Cleveland Browns and where they sit right now and the odds associated with them, correct?
Absolutely.
So we'd have, we'll say 3-8, 2-8, 4-8.
Fantastic. And that's what we're talking about. Again, it'll be 7 picks in the first 2 rounds. That's a ways off, and we don't need to talk about that. We'll focus on the guys here. But that's when you really look at what this draft, that was supposed to be 10 players, the fact that it turned into 15 adding Jamar Taylor, and on top of that, it's turned into another one, another, and two more twos. That's an exciting haul, and that's what Jenny Vrentis is going to talk to us about at 1:30 here today. I will say, when you talk about the Cleveland Browns and you're talking about what they are doing in terms of culture change, talent infusion. You know, you and I have had an opportunity to go now and watch more tape on some of these guys that are coming in, and just the specific skill sets that they're adding, you can tell that they knew what they needed. They needed guys who could catch the football. Let's give these quarterbacks a chance, RG3, Josh McCown, Cody Kessler. Let's give them a chance. And let's find different guys, because when you watch now, as I've really gone through and had a deep dive into Lewis and Higgins and Peyton, while you could lump Higgins and Peyton together, they're totally different guys. 2 years ago, Rashard Higgins averaged over 9 yards after the catch per reception, one of the top numbers in the league. He's very good in space. Peyton is more your physical, big-bodied guy. Both of them release off the line very well against press coverage. Coleman can hit you with the home run over the top. He can make a home run just throwing him the ball 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. It doesn't matter. And then you have Ricardo Lewis, who is a vertical guy that can take the top off of a defense. And so what they did, they addressed not only the position need, but addressed it for the modern game, because now you have a guy that you could line up on one side on the outside and Lewis, who could take the top off. You have guys in Coleman who can line up anywhere on the field and make and win for you. And you look at Peyton and Higgins, both can play outside, but both can play kind of that, what I call the heavy slot or the big slot. They have the route running to do it. They have the body to do it. They can get down the seam. And it's going to be exciting to see.
Kind of what we saw Miles Austin do a couple years ago.
Yeah, Money Miles, where he would line up and be that guy.
He was a bigger guy, bodying, you know, some nickelbacks and getting open on safeties, predominantly on third down as well.
And I would say that Peyton is the closest to Miles. Higgins is very smooth, and I'm excited to see him. The question for Higgins is going to be, because his routes are excellent, the way that his change of direction at the top of his routes is excellent. The question is, can he consistently get separation against NFL corners who are
What was the 40
faster?
That was so bad?
4.64.
Okay.
I mean, it's not horrible.
Which is horrible. That's Laquan Treadwell 40.
Faster.
Right.
Yeah. Alshon Jeffrey ran slower than that. So it's not an end-all, be-all, especially when that guy. The interesting thing, and I'll tell you why. You know, we talked about these guys are moldable balls of clay. Higgins, at least from my eye, was the most finished product of all of them. And so while he was incredibly productive, people think like maybe, oh, well, that's all he's going to be. So I think that's why a guy who was as productive and looks as good on tape as he does was there in the sixth, whereas Ricardo Lewis is the guy that you see, oh, man, the ceiling, the upside for him is immense given his characteristics. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to look back at Hollywood Higgins and say this guy was a steal for the Browns.
Hollywood
I expect
Higgins,
him to make a big impact.
I'm just diving back into Dane Brugler's draft guide, which still, you know, holds its place here in the Dog Bowl. He was the eighth wide receiver with a second round grade.
And he was the eighth wide receiver. Second round grade, eighth receiver.
A little over 6'1", 196, 4.64.
Yeah. Very productive, very smooth, better after the catch than I saw, fearless across the middle, good hands catcher, high points the ball well, is excellent at tracking on over the balls coming in over his shoulder, very diverse route tree, ran very much a pro offense at Colorado State. He is, I think when he comes in, he may have been the fourth receiver taken, but I bet I'm going to say in the rookie minicamps, I think he and Corey Coleman's going to
we'll
be different, but I think Higgins is going to look the best to everybody's eye and be like, whoa, this guy can play. The question will be, can he get open against NFL corners on a, you know, day-in, day-out basis? But I'm very excited about Hollywood Higgins. This is a guy, in 2014 when he had Grayson, 8 straight games to finish out the year with 100 yards or more receiving, 10 of the last 11, and of 9 of those 10, over 140. Even in his last year, 3 of the final 4 games, over 100 yards, and he was getting tons of defensive attention. Tons of defensive attention. I'm excited to see him. I'm excited to see these receivers get in here as the Browns finally get these guys. To me, it's almost like we couldn't wait for the draft while it happened. I can't wait for this rookie minicamp.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled that it's happening next Friday and Saturday at FanFest. So at FanFest, we're going to get to have that cool experience, the interaction with the Dog Pound, and you guys can get your tickets at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. But also, there's going to be a rookie minicamp practice right there at FanFest at First Energy Stadium. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Yes. Indeed.
Yes.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take over the phones, 216-578-0850. It's also Mailbag Wednesday. Use the hashtag AskCBD. We will give you multi-word answers, verbose, a lot of verbosity out of the CBD crew for you today. But you have questions about the Browns, about these picks. We have studied and taken a deep dive on all these guys, watching their tape of the last couple of years. We are familiar with what these guys bring to the table. If you want to have, you have questions, we've got answers. Use the hashtag AskCBD. All right, we'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and Jason Gibbs. Wilhelm, given that it is May the 4th be with you, I asked my kids, I said, all right, we're watching a Star Wars movie tonight. Which Star Wars movie do you want? And I was hoping, I'm not going to be honest, if I'm ranking them right now, I'm really into The Force Awakens. Rey is quickly becoming one of my favorite Star Wars characters of all time. Quickly. I also love Return of the Jedi. That's where I was hoping they would go. But my kids are so set on it, so they said, we want to watch number one. And I said, why? They said, well, we've gone through the cycle now 4 times, 1 through 7. We need to start at 1. I'm like, fair enough. Let's go. Giddy up.
Yeah, I will probably – I'm still on the Force Awakens kick. My
that's what I wanted.
My wife bought it for my son, you know, soon after it came out on DVD, late last month. And the one thing we haven't done yet – so I don't know if we're going to be watching the movie – but I told my wife, I go, don't go buy the $16.99 cheap one. I want the deleted scene, the story behind the making of. Because that's what really got me into Star Wars and when, you know, I was of age to really understand the soap opera, the relationships, the family ties, the planets, and, you know, the order of how everything goes. And my full understanding was not just watching the movies. It was watching the deleted scenes of, you know, that came along with the DVDs.
Yeah.
And then watching it again, and it's like watching an entirely different series and when you know everything.
I'm a Lord of the Rings guy. I know you're not.
I like the movies. If they're on TV, I'll watch them, but I couldn't tell you the order they come in.
Okay. So Lord of the Rings, similarly, they released the movies, and then they would, like, 6 months after, release the director's extended edition,
yeah,
which are usually 30 to 45 minutes longer, yeah, and has everything.
And you're talking a 2-hour and 30-minute movie
is. But to me, that's real cool when you get kind of the extra story that they wanted to tell, but they felt they didn't have the time. So,
right.
Yeah, I like that as well. I will say this. This is what bothers me, though. Why didn't they release it in 3D right away? It's BS. And I know the answer is because they wanted all of us jamokes to go out there and buy the Blu-ray, which we all did. And then they're going to release it on the Blu-ray 3D, and we're going to go back, and we're going to buy it again.
I don't feel the need to have 3D.
It's not
so
nice.
Technically, I'm not a jamoke.
Well, fine. I'll call myself the jamoke, because I will want it in 3D. Why wouldn't they just – come on. Every movie that's 3D is released at the same time now. But
it's
going to
be a great week.
Purpose.
I mean, May 4th, Star Wars Day.
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo tomorrow.
A huge day.
And Friday, Captain America Civil War. Boom. Marvel. Let's go. I'm ready for that. My son is ready for that. He is Team Iron Man.
You're big.
We are taking all people who are Captain America on right now. Team Iron Man.
You asked me that, and I really didn't know how to answer. I'm not going to lie. That's not a world that I frequently live in.
Are you on the light side or the dark side? That's an easy question for you to answer.
I answered it correctly, right?
You did.
Who am I? Which team was I?
Team Iron Man.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, good.
I mean, we got War Machine. You know, we got Black Panther. Spider-Man pops up on our side in the movie.
It's important. These are all important things.
Yeah, I judge your character based on who you choose.
Yeah, no, I was happy I gave the right answer because I really didn't have come with one. 216-578-0850. Gibbs, are you with us?
Hello.
Hello, Gibbs. Gibbs, are you doing anything for May the 4th be with you? Is this a big day in the Gibbs household?
It's a big day because it's a golf league day, and I'm hoping the weather holds out.
It's looking dark outside the windows here in Berea.
It started off looking great.
And is your league still at
Sweetbriar?
Sweetbriar, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Legacy tonight?
Yes.
Ooh.
So if it's raining, it's still playable.
Yes, it is.
It's that whole lightning issue. So we'll see what happens. That's what it means to me. I love Star Wars. I'm not going to lie. I have not seen the new one.
Still.
It's really good.
I need to get like the wedding stuff over.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, it's
just open. Just open up your checkbook and let her go do it.
And it's gonna be great. No, already did that. Trying to rein that back in.
Yes. Good luck.
Yeah. Exactly.
That horse is actually, out of the barn.
She's actually really good about that stuff. But yeah, it's just one of those things. That's like, if I'm not working, I'm working on the wedding. And
or golfing, apparently.
Well, I'm trying. That's my, like, 2 hours of solace.
Yes.
Essentially. And then she's like, yeah, by the way, when you come over tonight, we got more wedding stuff. I'm like, oh, my God, is June 11th here yet? Because then, like, life goes back to normalcy a little bit. And, again, I'm not saying I'm not excited. I'm fired up about it. But, you know, it's occupying a lot of time right now in otherwise what would be my, quote, downtime of the year.
Yes, I understand that. I'm also, by the way, excited about tomorrow, Cinco de Mayo.
Oh,
I mean, if I don't find myself to a barrio and a Taco Bell, I'm going to be disappointed.
My wife and I made, as we kind of prep for the beginning of our week, we go to Trader Joe's right after our Monday workout, and we buy, like, you know, 80-15 beef, we get our cod, we get our, you know, the fruit and veggies there, and I saw the carne asada, like this already seasoned carne asada, and like I used to buy it in San Diego and season it myself, and then do, like, I'm talking 4 or 5 pounds of it for like a big get together. I saw that
for
and
the
I'm
fajitas.
Like, oh yes, oh yes. So we'll be buying some carne asada. We're gonna crack open the grill. First of the year.
Cracked it open the other day. Well, mine's up year round, but
mine's year round.
Yeah, Monday I had salmon going, I had chicken going, I had some pork chops.
I'm making a really, really strong cod right now.
Really?
Feel like a whitefish? It's not fishy at all.
Yeah, that's the key for me.
Very good for you.
Too.
Well, I made one really, really good, and then I made one that was a little fishy. My wife was like, and then the next time she's like, go a little heavier on the lemon. So I made it, went a little heavy on the lemon, and the third, fourth, fifth batches have come out great.
By the way, Hollywood Higgins saying, can't wait to see the Dog Pound fans. Knowing that I report Tuesday gives me chill bumps. I like this kid, Hollywood. I spent some time with him, some solitary with him this morning on the film. Very quiet.
In your
quiet
bed? Thing.
No. I was here in the studio. I'm excited about him. I'm excited about these receivers. I really think that's going to be the biggest difference. That's going to jump out at people, just the difference in the receiving room. And I'm excited to see that. That's the one thing that I'm looking forward to more than anything.
Not only are you adding more players to that room and new players, you're adding talented players. And as you said, with different skill sets.
And with size.
With size. But there's a youth and energy that they're going to bring with them, too. As you said, the same way that they don't know the losing culture that has kind of encompassed the Cleveland Browns as an organization for the last 15 years, they don't know what the past regime was. So they only know one way to run a route. You know, high energy, fast pace. They're going to get fine-tuned by Al Saunders. We know after each and every route to help them continue to tweak and tweak and tweak until they're running it exactly the way he wants it done.
And yeah, they're going to get great coaching. They're going to have the energy, the enthusiasm. There are going to be a lot of guys here. You know, the other thing I can't wait to see is what level of intensity does Scooby Wright, does Joe the Show, and Carl Nassib bring just to practice? Because those are three guys that I think are going to bring it, especially Scooby Wright. That guy is a little nuts, and I mean that as a compliment.
And this, based on the three gentlemen that you just kind of named out, do not be surprised if these guys are going at a tempo that when in the OTAs, when put with or against veteran players, the veteran player doesn't take a liking to the pace with which they're practicing. And a little scuffle and grabbing of the face mask doesn't happen a time or two with all three of the individuals.
I think the one difference, I think it would be much more of a culture shock for these veterans last year than it will be this year. Because Hugh is demanding pace, he's demanding energy, he's demanding effort, and he is demanding when they don't get it right, do it again.
But I just mean on a Thursday or Friday after having three or four OTAs that week.
Oh, yeah.
Nassib, Schobert, and Scooby Wright only know one tempo, and they've still got the fresh legs coming out of college. And they're going to come, they're going to pop off the line of scrimmage. They're going to pop a guy, you know, who's sort of got his, and I know Hugh Jackson's, you know, changing the culture, changing the mind, but his weekend is 30 minutes away, right?
Yes.
And someone, one of those three guys is going to bring it, not to the liking of that player, and that scuffle will happen.
Well, I remember when Scott Solomon first came here.
Bloodbath.
Bloodbath in the middle of middle of the season. And people are like, I don't want to practice. What is this guy? What is this, huh?
Right.
Yeah. No, this year, you're going to get, there's going to be a lot of that out there. You're going to see a lot of it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jenny Vrentas, senior writer at Monday Morning Quarterback, Sports Illustrated. She's with us, wrote a very good article about the Browns' approach to this draft. We'll see what she thought, what she's hearing, and much, much more here on CBD.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. Very happy now to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and welcome in our guest, Jenny Vrentas, senior writer for Monday Morning Quarterback and Sports Illustrated. Jenny, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your article as well, which you wrote for the Monday Morning Quarterback, talking about the Browns, their process, and kind of, in some ways, what is old is new, and kind of taking a page out of some successful franchise and franchise builders. You cited Jimmy Johnson there about their strategy. How did you feel about the Browns' plan and their execution on it?
Yeah, I think what's always interesting when you have a new regime, the first draft says a lot about what they want their football team to look like, how they plan to rebuild. And so the biggest takeaway I had was how big the draft class was and how much value they got out of each of their picks. So to go in with 10 draft picks, which is what they had, you know, around the time of the combine, and to turn that into, you know, 14 draft picks, a veteran, you know, a first and a second rounder next year and a second rounder in 2018, that's a pretty significant haul, and it just sort of speaks to their commitment to trying to maximize the value out of each pick. So if you're going to take a player there, make sure that it's a player that is worth exactly where the pick is at. If not, maybe you can trade back, still get that guy, and pick up some extra draft capital. So, you know, it's pretty clear that they're trying to get a lot of young guys in. They want to build their team that way. And you hear that a lot in the NFL. I just think that the degree to which they committed to it in this draft was significant.
And Jenny, how has, you know, in your preparation for this article and your research, how has Paul DePodesta, this analytical approach of moving back and gaining assets and really starting from the ground up, been received by some of the individuals that you spoke to in preparation for this around the league?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's sort of watching, right? And that's become one of the storylines. How will, you know, people love to talk about the Moneyball guy, and then you have the football guy, Hugh Jackson. How is everything meshing together? But, I mean, I think this is a philosophy that makes sense from, you know, both sides. I think, you know, from an analytics side, if you look at the past history of the draft and some of the studies that have been done, you know, you don't necessarily have a better chance of hitting on a pick if it's in the top 10 versus, you know, the bottom third of the round. So in that sense, if you have a 50-50 chance on a player, you know, it makes sense to maybe trade back and pick up some extra picks. Basically, you're just playing the odds. You figure if you draft a bunch of players, you know, you know that you're going to miss on some. Every team misses on some. The draft is a little bit of a gamble no matter how good your evaluation skills are. But if you draft a bunch of players, you have a better chance of hitting on some. And I think both a guy from an analytics side and a guy from the football side, I think both of them appreciate that because, you know, from a football side, you know how hard it is to develop guys and how hard it is to project guys into the NFL. So I just think getting in a volume of younger guys, still, you know, they still had a lot of premium picks. You know, they still picked 15th overall and, you know, they still had a lot of high picks to get some of these blue chip players, but they just got more of them.
They did talk with Jenny Vrentis from Monday Morning Quarterback and Sports Illustrated, and you talk about that. Originally, you know, when the draft order was laid out, the Browns were going to have 10 picks in the 2016 NFL draft. As you talked about, they turned that into 14 players, 15 including Jamar Taylor with the trade with Miami in the seventh round, plus a future one and two future twos. So almost doubling their draft capital, doubling significantly the early portion of it. And now they have those guys, and you talked about the football guy and the money ball guy in your article. Were you surprised that they were able to do this together collaboratively and both be so happy once the bullets were actually flying?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I don't know Paul DePodesta, you know, well, but I know Hugh Jackson, and I know how he's just – that's the kind of guy he is. He just wants the team to win, and he wants, you know – there would be a positive vibe in the organization. I think we've all seen that from the day he was hired, just the enthusiasm that he is always bringing whenever he talks about the Browns and what they're trying to do here. So from his perspective as a head coach, he's been around a long time. He wants this to work, and I'm sure that that's the same for every one of the other people, you know, DePodesta, Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry. They all just want this to work, and, yeah, certainly – a lot of times in organizations, you start off with a good vibe and things change over time.
Right.
But I do think, you know, there was a clear, you know, just the way they came out of the draft room, it felt like they both kind of, they got what they wanted and probably executed the plan better than expected. I mean, I think the amount of capital they reaped from that number two pick, that was pretty pretty remarkable to me.
Jenny, were you shocked or surprised at all that the Cleveland Browns in the third round took Cody Kessler while Connor Cook and Cardale Jones, both local products, sat on the board and went later in the draft?
Well, I think, you know, the surprise there was just he wasn't a guy that people maybe expected to go in the third round, but it's so hard to evaluate quarterbacks, and different coaches look for different things. I think Hugh Jackson has a really good track record with quarterbacks. You know, I think we saw that last season when, you know, A.J. McCarron had to step in, and you know, he was a later round pick and who had been successful in college but wasn't a high pick in the draft, and they got a lot out of him in Cincinnati. So, you know, I think there's certain characteristics he looks for. And, I think the best quarterback in this draft was Jared Goff. So once the Rams traded up into the number one slot, you know, the Browns weren't going to take a quarterback at number two.
Right.
So I think from that point on, to add a quarterback, it was going to be a guy who – their evaluation sort of matched the value of the pick they were at. And, yeah, I mean, I think it was surprising. Their evaluation of Cody is probably different than other teams, but there are certain attributes in him that they liked. I think one of the things Hugh Jackson mentioned was accuracy. That was something he really looked for in a college quarterback. So, I don't know. When he says trust the pick, I mean – I guess you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt on that one, right?
Absolutely. We're talking with Jenny Vrentis from Monday Morning Quarterback and Sports Illustrated. Jenny, in your article, clearly you talked with Joe Banner and Jimmy Johnson, and we know that Joe Banner was here with the Browns and was a guy who, in his own way, acquired draft capital, trading out of a poor 2013 draft into what was a loaded 2014 draft. Unfortunately, he didn't get to make those follow-up selections. Were you surprised that he was able to be so positive about his former team? And do you think that if these guys are successful, do you think that this will make history shine a much more favorable light on Joe Banner, who may have been ahead of his time with the trading of Trent Richardson, et cetera?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was interesting. He was very positive. He spoke very highly of their philosophy. And so I think, you know, from someone who had once been with the organization and is no longer with the team, I think in some ways that carries more weight when they're appraising an approach that was used. I think his point, I mean, he also brought up Jimmy Johnson sort of starting to do this in 1989 and the early 90s, and when they commissioned a study when Joe Banner was with the Eagles, sort of comparing the hit rate of picks in the top 10 versus the bottom third of the first round, and they found that it was sort of a 50-50 chance of hitting on the guy no matter where in the first round he selected. That was sort of building off what Jimmy Johnson had done, and so when he worked at Cleveland, that was a study they referenced in strategy meetings. That was part of the philosophy. I think the flip side of that, of course, is what do you do with those picks and do you get the right guys?
Right.
And so, you know, obviously in 2014, the two first round picks, you know, neither of those has panned out the way the team had hoped. So if you get the draft capital, you know, you have to use it on the right players. And, you know, of course, a couple days after the draft, that's way too soon to decide that. But just in terms of the strategy, I really like the strategy Joe Banner really liked the strategy. I'm sure Bill Belichick from afar, he would never say it, but I'm sure he really liked the strategy too, because this is kind of what he does in New England too.
It is. They're the ones who, it's funny that people don't really recognize that, but they're the ones who, you know, in the modern era, obviously Jimmy Johnson, but the Patriots trade down more than any team, trade players for picks more than any team, because, and they haven't been really that great of drafters. They just have had so many swings at the plate. And, oh, by the way, they happen to have Tom Brady, that it's allowed them to sustain their success in a league that, quite frankly, isn't built for a team to be as bad as long as the Browns have been, nor for one to be as good as long as the Patriots have been. It's their ability to keep building through the draft around their nucleus.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of counting up the numbers, they had 93 draft picks over the last decade. And, you know, I was just looking at other teams in their division, for instance. So the Patriots had 93. The Jets had 28 less picks, I think, over that same span. So if you think about it, you know, if they're hitting on more players through the draft, they're also, they have more chances to hit on them. So it sort of makes sense. Now, you mentioned it. They have a franchise quarterback. The same is true with the Green Bay Packers. So when you're building through the draft to get pieces around and you already have your franchise guy, obviously that becomes easier. But, you know, the Browns are not in a situation where they have the franchise quarterback, and they were not in a position where they were going to be able to draft someone like Jared Goff, number one. So they took this approach in the first draft that they did, and I think it makes sense.
Jimmy Johnson in the article was talking just basically kind of about his experience. Did he comment specifically on what the Browns did?
Yeah, you know, he said he had not talked to anyone from the Browns, because I was curious. I said, you know, this strategy, a lot of, you know, coaches or executives have consulted and kind of gone back to the strategy of the 90s. But he liked it because he said, you know, this is what he did. This is what he's talked with Belichick many times about. They've talked draft strategy a lot. And so I think I think Jimmy Johnson likes to see other teams sort of taking a cue from what he did. I'm sure he got a kick out of that.
I'm sure he did as well. And as you closed out your article, I love this. Plan number one, stockpile draft picks. Check two, turn those picks into players who can win football games. To be determined. And certainly everybody here is very excited to see the Browns get these rookies on the field. I have to ask you, how surprised were you when they went and took not one, not two, not three, but four wide receivers in this draft?
Yeah, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, one thing, too, speaking of that is, you know, they let some free agents walk out the door this year, right? So next year they'll get some more compensatory picks.
Yes.
And this year's draft, a couple of those compensatory picks were used on receivers, I believe. So, you know, that just sort of speaks how that whole process works when you're weighing letting guys go versus what you'll get in the draft the next year. But I wasn't surprised because that's, you know, a dire position of need, right? I mean, just looking back at the numbers for passing touchdowns last year, caught by wide receivers, they were not pretty. So I think I like the fact that they took four, because you figure if you take four, you know, maybe you hit on one or two and you're way better off than you were before.
Certainly were. Jenny, we certainly appreciate the time and obviously the focus, the article, the first draft of history that you wrote for Monday Morning Quarterback today. And we've tweeted out the link and everybody can follow you on Twitter at Jenny Vrentas, JennyVrentas. Thanks so much for the time and keep up the good work.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. There's Jenny Vrentas, our guest here on CBD. Again, it is Mailbag Wednesday. Tweet us questions, as many of you already have, using the hashtag AskCBD. Also, get on the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850 here on ESPN Cleveland.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs, 216-578-0850. Let's go to the Cleveland Elf on the line. What's up, Cleveland Elf?
Hey, how's it going, gents? How you feeling today?
Good, man.
Good.
Good, good. Hey, real quick, I wanted to touch on some of the undrafted free agents we signed, if there's anybody you guys like. I know we got the Matthews kid. Didn't give up any sacks, I believe, in college. Is that right?
The undrafted free agent center. Again, we haven't confirmed. We haven't confirmed anybody here with the Browns yet. As soon as they're signed, we will have those confirmations for you. But yes, good center, obviously great bloodlines.
Right. So I don't know. I think there might be a kicker competition coming up in Berea, too, from what I'm hearing. They might be signing a couple kickers also.
Yes, I think two. Correct, Nathan?
I believe that's on the rumored list again. We'll know officially. I don't know if that's as much a competition. Could be one for Travis Coons. I know this. They have been very happy with what Travis Coons has been doing thus far in the offseason. And a guy who really, the truth of the matter is, didn't miss a field goal that made it past the line of scrimmage. And he's been working, kicking over the nets. They kind of have, you know, the throwing nets with the three windows.
Yep.
And they put it right in front of him.
Getting
and he's
been
up. Kicking over him. And I talked to him about it. And he said, you know, I just had to change my technique a little bit, and I've done that. I'm able to get the ball high and drive it. He was able to kick it over the net and consistently make 55-yarders in practice. And he said, the amazing thing is you get so used to it. And at first, when they put it out there, he's like, I didn't know. I was like, well, what? And then he said, then you see them take it away. And he said, I have so much room to kick the ball.
It
boggles my mind.
I mean, for someone like you who's essentially a scratch golfer, that's like, you know, you having to flop a shot over a tree.
Sure.
You know, and you don't think you're able to get it up and get it down and land it on the green and make that shot until you need to, like, you need to pitch it over and carry something that's not a tree.
Yeah, it seems so easy.
It seems
like
so easy.
Not even there.
Right.
It's like I remember when I was a kid and I was a hoopster, I had a thing called the AccuRim, which...
Yeah, it tapers in the rim.
You clip, snap it onto your rim, and a ball you couldn't make... You know, the amazing thing people don't realize, maybe some people do realize it because I'm sure they've heard a lot, is you could put in a traditional basketball hoop, you could put two balls side by side through at the same time.
Yes.
That's how big it is. With the AccuRim, oh no. You could only make a shot on the AccuRim that would have been a pure swish.
Correct.
That was it. So then when you take it off, it's like, Michael Jordan, the rim looked like a big old bucket.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's good stuff there. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Nathan Zgurup, Matt Wilhelm with you here on CBD. We also, again, it is Mailbag Wednesday, hashtag AskCBD is the way to get on there. And we can hop in the mailbag. I got a couple of them.
I was going to say, I've got a few as well.
Yeah, go ahead, Gibbs. Hop
all
in.
Right. From Josh Morgan, how well do you think Danny Shelton fits in the Ray Horton defense?
I'll speak on that. I think it's going to be great. I really do, because Danny Shelton was misused in general last year, let alone the fact that he was a rookie. And I would say this kind of to his face, he's probably slightly overweight as well. And that came across in his play. And yet he played, you know, 60% of snaps for us. But a nose tackle in a very, very good and dominant 3-4 defense needs to own the space in the middle. And what we did too often was we got Danny running, moving too far. You know, and when Danny gets moving, he gets upright, makes him easy to block. When he's going to be able to hold down that middle, his center of gravity is going to be extremely low. He's going to be taking a double team and playing his role in this defense, which means the playmakers around him, Dez Bryant, Carl Nassib, DeMario Davis, Christian Kirksey, those guys are able to skate clean or have one-on-one matchups because the big guy in the middle took two. So I think he's going to be a better fit, and they're going to simplify things for Danny because Danny needs to be playing in a phone booth.
Yes.
What we saw at Washington, he showed off his athleticism, being able to make, you know, numbers-to-numbers plays. I don't need that from Danny Shelton. Take two and then do the math. Someone's in a lot of people are in one-on-one battles, and one guy's running free.
Is it possible in your mind that this year they may say, let's put a John Hughes there to take up the double. Let's put a Jamie Meter there to take up the double. And let's put Danny at the three technique and let him be a one-gap penetrator.
Yeah, but I think that would be a game plan-specific style of defense against that team because you like Danny winning, you know, in that B-gap as opposed to having him winning in an A-gap, you know, with the guard in the center. He'd be more guard-tackle. And maybe if Danny, and I know he's been very adamant about, you know, speaking about this, every opportunity he's had, he's leaning down. This weight training staff is working with Danny diligently to get his weight down because I think 335, 330-ish is the perfect weight for Danny Shelton. That 350 is just, I mean, it's a 15-pound weight vest that, you know, that doesn't do you any good. 330 is the same, and it's a different 330. So I think if you can get him penetrating up the field a little bit like we saw at the University of Washington with how athletic he was a disruptor.
Yeah.
He was a big guy, but he was a disruptor in that defense, and that's something that we did not see.
And also, we have an opportunity, as you've talked so many times about Ray Horton and using kind of that hybrid multiple front, that you could throw Nassib, for example, at a defensive end. You could throw Ogba at a defensive end. You could have Dez Bryant at defensive end. And then you could use John Hughes.
As a nose.
And you could,
he'd be aligned as a nose, but he would not play like a nose.
Right. And you could also go with a four-man front, just go a 4-3 front and have him be just a traditional defensive tackle in
and
4-3.
I think what, you know, Ray Horton and what makes the additions that we have both for Hugh Jackson offensively at the wide receiver position, but for Ray Horton on defense is there's going to be a lot of rotating very early because they're going to start breaking down what they see on film and go, and because there's so many stunts even just along the defensive line. When you get into those nickel and dime defenses and you're wanting to play coverage, that means you have to rush four.
And get there.
And rushing four, that straight rush, is only one out of five rushes. It's a two-man game. It's a four-man game. So there's a lot of moving. Who athletically and physically can penetrate? Who can be the looper without losing ground and get there and dip and rip? All those things are going to happen. So those combinations, you're going to see a lot of guys. And I would probably say even the first week of training camp, you're going to see a lot of rotating along that defensive front to get it fine-tuned of exactly what fits our need in this certain package or this certain down and distance.
I remember when you'd watch the 49ers at their peak, Justin Smith would kind of take the two
and
Alden Smith would loop around on a lot of those stunts and get to the quarterback and dominate. Let's go to the phones again. Jason in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes. Gotcha, man.
All right. Cool. One theme I've noticed in this draft is a lot of these players didn't have consistency at the head coaching spot. They proved to be able to succeed with different guys at the helm. So especially the wide receivers. I just talked to a guy I know down in Georgia who's a diehard Bulldog fan and watched Ricardo Lewis, you know, do well, but I don't think he had consistency at the quarterback or the head coach. Well, head coaching maybe not, but quarterback position fell off quite a bit at Auburn. So that's just a theme I wanted to touch on. The other reason I wanted to call was Justin Gilbert might pop this year, and the reason is Corey Coleman is going to be matched up against him all day in training camp. And you know Corey Coleman being a fiery guy. If he can't get underneath Justin Gilbert's skin and get that player that
if
we
Justin
all saw,
Justin Gilbert gets reps against Corey Coleman. I don't know.
Yeah,
and I think we might have to have Justin Gilbert might need jock straps on auto ship because Corey Coleman's
right.
Going to give him the business.
Right, and I think he might step up. I really do. And, you know, another thing, we got Ogba from Oklahoma State, a good character guy who's been an Oklahoma State alum. Maybe he can get into Gilbert here and say, time to step up with me, you know? So I'm excited that the prospect of maybe getting another first-round pick out of this whole deal in Justin Gilbert, getting him back. I believe in him. I'm going to hope for it.
That's good. And you do. I would imagine I hope that Justin Gilbert, he has all the physical attributes that you would want.
Yes.
Technique and the emphasis that these – we've been talking about Al Saunders and Ray Horton and all. So if these coaches bring their experience, you hope – I only hope that Justin Gilbert sits there like a sponge who doesn't think that he's figured it out because he truly has been trial by fire, and right now the fire's winning. He's not overcoming the trials that have been the NFL game.
The
so I hope someone gets through to him on, I don't have it all figured out. Yes, I might have money in my pocket. I might have been drafted 9th overall, 8th overall, whatever it was, but to maintain my reputation – for the other 60 years of my life, I need to like apply myself in every way, shape, and form right now.
And to stay in the National Football League.
Correct.
And hopefully he can. Immensely talented, and I know that's somebody that the Browns would like to get the most out of. And I think one guy that I think will benefit from the scheme change, I think, is Pierre Desir. He is not at the line of scrimmage press man corner, but he's a very good off man corner.
He can cover a lot of ground.
Yes.
You know, he can get big. In different, even in cover two, being able to like play up and make the tackle on a curl, but yet, you know, get the depth necessary to not allow that ball, that seven route, to get thrown
in
behind
him. Yeah, because it's a tough throw for him. For some people, not for us yesterday.
It
was not a tough throw. So we had a nice game of catch yesterday, for those wondering. Wilhelm helping me tune up in case I get the call. Always be ready, folks. ABR, Always be ready. All right, hour number two. Going to kick off with Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns from last night's draft review show, all along the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns radio network. Some very, very interesting, insightful stuff about what he feels about not only the rookies coming in, but some of the veterans on this team. Strong words, especially about the running backs Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson. You're going to want to hear that, and that's coming your way next.